Sveicināti Delfi TV un RTV skatītāji. Jūsu ekrānos raidījums Spried ar Delfi un studijā esmu es, Alīna Lastovska. Bieži vien runājot par dažādiem rādītājiem arī ekonomikā, mēs salīdzinām sevi ar tuvākiem kaimiņiem – Lietuvu un arī Igauniju. Arī politiķi un amatpersonas bieži vien kā mērķi min tieši panākt šīs valsts vai par apsteigt. Par to, kāpēc atsevišķos rādītājos Igaunija mums ir priekšā par Baltijas valstu sadarbību un drošību, kā arī citiem politikas jautājumiem, es šodien iztaujāšu Igaunijas premjerministri Kaju Kallasu. Sveicināt!
Hello!
Šī saruna notiks angliski, jums bijis pieejami subtitri, tā tiek ierakstīta arī pirmdien, bet bez saturiskām izmaiņām mēs to publicēsim otrdien. So, hello, nice to meet you here in Delphi studio. Today, there will be a meeting between three Baltic states prime ministers and Germany. What are your expectations on this meeting?
First of all, I think it's great that we have this annual meeting with Chancellor Scholz as well, that we can express the concerns that we have in our region and also coordinate when we are going to European summit, but also the NATO summit that is coming up in July, so that we don't see any surprises and we can hold the same line, because the unity is very important, not only for the three Baltic states, but also for the European Union as such. So we are going to discuss definitely security issues of our region, but also Ukraine. How can we support them more? We're going to discuss NATO summit and how we could make the best outcome of it. That is definitely the topics, but all the frozen assets issues that we have regarding this war will be topics.
Okay, if we talk about our concerns and our security, can we feel completely safe with a neighbor like Russia, taking into account what is done in these 2 years, or it's impossible?
Well, we have always known that Russia is a threat, and now also our Western colleagues see it as such. I mean, we have said in NATO that the most direct threat to NATO is Russia. But what we can do with this threat is to prepare so that we are strong enough. That means investing more in our own defense. That also means collective security and the defense plans that we have in NATO. 2 years ago, we went from deterrence posture to defense posture so that we would be able to defend our countries from the first moment. And the understanding is also with our Western colleagues.
So you believe there will be time where we can say that we are completely safe?
We are safe because we are in NATO. That's why Russia hasn't attacked us, because we are in NATO. But of course, can we just sit on our hands and not do anything because we are under this NATO's umbrella? Then no. We have to invest more in our defense. We have to constantly do the exercises and prepare. And because when we are prepared, when we are strong enough, then the aggressor might not take this step against us. The weakness only provokes Russia.
When you say we have to invest more, you talk about Baltic states, or you mean other European countries?
I mean everybody in Europe, and I mean all the NATO's countries. In 1988, all the NATO's countries were investing more than 2% of their GDP to defense, some even 6% of their GDP. Because why? Because the threat was real. There was a Cold War going on. Now there is a hot war going on the European soil, and still not all the countries are doing the same. I mean, we in the Baltics, we have invested more than 2%. Estonia is now investing 3.2% of our GDP to defense, but it's not the same for all the Western countries.
For example, Germany.
Well, they have increased now and they will reach 2%, and considering they have made a huge turnaround with this Zeitenwende, but there are other countries that still think that it's far away. And I think what we have to learn from the 1930s is that when something happens in Europe, it will very quickly spread everywhere. So if some countries are thinking that we are safe because we are further away, then it's not true. When I go to some, you know, European countries and they say that, oh, you are the front line. And I say, you know, taken geographically, you are much closer to the war than we are. So I think everybody should take this very, very seriously.
So we can convince them.
We have been able to convince them more and more if you think about, you know, all the steps that our Western allies have done. But still, I feel that there's more to do, yes.
More to do. And if we talk about Baltic region, Baltic states, what can be next steps to improve our security?
Well, one is definitely air defense. I know that we are investing together with Latvia into air defense, and we are also consulting with the allies so that we would have more air defense in our region. I think this is extremely important. Exercise is very important so that we are able to actually defend our countries together from the first moment. And all these, you know, chains of command, communication lines, everything has to be in place. And also to show to Russia that we are strong enough. Don't think about taking another step. I think this is something that Ukrainians have said to us, that they didn't really reveal to Russia how prepared they were. And that's why they thought, I mean, Russians thought that it's an easy win because there was no resistance in Crimea or Donbas or Lugansk. But now it's different. They have built their army, and this war has been going on for 3 years where Ukrainians have been defending themselves.
If we talk about investments in defense, Estonian government has decided to create this new defense investment fund to accelerate the development of defense industry in Estonia. When you tweeted about it, you also wrote, "Hope our example also inspires others." Mm-hmm. You mean other European countries, Latvia as well?
Yes. You know, what we thought in Estonia is that we have a very vibrant tech sector, and you know, regarding the production of drones, unmanned vehicles, all these things that can be tested on the battlefield like every day. But what is the problem? They are very used to raising capital in the private funds, but all the funds are closed for defense investment. So that's why we saw that there's definitely this market obstacle that we have to overcome and make this investment fund to provide a seed money so that also to ask the private funds to come along. We have made together with 14 prime ministers also a letter to European Investment Bank because they also have you know, restrictions to invest to defense, which is not wise considering that we all need to do more. So all these things, the obstacles are access to capital and what can we do in regard, and that's why the defense fund.
Okay, and you also last week in Paris, you said that we need to think about other creative ways to kickstart European defense.
Yes.
Can you elaborate to what creative ways
yes.
can be?
Well, I've proposed Eurobonds so that like in COVID, I mean, when we had a very acute crisis, we got ourselves together and raised capital together. I mean, issued the bonds, and so we could, you know, buy vaccines and do all the things that we had to do at that time. Now we also have a very relevant crisis right now, and we need to do these investments now. So I've proposed Eurobonds idea the same way that we used in COVID. Of course, you know, I've said as well that if that doesn't fly, propose something else, but it's a reality that we need the capital to invest in defense. When I talk to the defense industry, it's like a chicken and egg situation. So the defense industry says, we don't have orders from the governments. And the government say that, you know, the defense industry is not producing enough, so we can't buy. But actually, everybody needs to do more. I mean, industry should take more risks, but also the governments need to think about creative ways of investing.
So after your speech and your proposal, so you think other countries will listen to this proposal?
Yes, I've actually received a lot of good feedback, and I see that countries are coming on board. Of course, there are also countries that are not that, positive about this, but I said that, you know, if you agree with me that there's a problem, there is a gap in investment, then, you know, propose something else. I'm not stuck to this idea, but propose something else that we need to do or can do now.
Was there other proposals?
So far, not many, but one of the leaders of a big country said to me that they are thinking about this and they are not saying no immediately.
About these discussions and real action, how do you think this gap between we discuss, we talk for, I don't know, months, maybe longer, and then we do something, isn't this gap too big?
Well, in democracies, we discuss and take time to make the decisions. I know that it's frustrating for people who want to see results immediately, but it's also a value that we discuss and everybody is on board. So I think that we are able to move fast when we want and when we are in a really, really acute crisis. If you think COVID, I mean, how fast we went from the decision to actual, you know, issuing of new vaccines and everything. So we are able to do that. But democracy also takes time, and we need to take that time as well to get the decisions right.
There was one year really popular quote about what we can do the best for our defense. The best way to secure ourselves is to make sure we help Ukraine to win its fight for freedom. Are you certain that Ukraine will receive the amount of aid to win this war?
I can't be certain, but I'm optimistic considering that America has now made a decision to help Ukraine, and there are different decisions made on different levels. If you think about the Czech initiative to find ammunition from other countries outside European Union, and then there are countries who have provided financing for this. We also have found outside European Union the ammunition that Ukraine needs, and so I see that there is really the understanding that that they need to win. Or actually, you know, we say Ukrainian victory has to be the goal, but some say that Ukraine can't lose. That is a different thing, of course. But you don't always win wars, but you never win them if you don't set victory as a goal. That's why we have to have victory as a goal.
Victory is a goal, and how long it would take?
That is a question, of course. Everybody wants this war to end immediately. I mean, I don't know anybody in Ukraine who is for war, but I think in Latvia we don't have to explain what peace under Russian terms means. It means mass deportations of people. It means suppressing your culture and language. It means all the atrocities and human suffering. So that's why Ukrainians know this as well. The peace has to be sustainable. That means that there also has to be accountability for the crimes committed.
You already mentioned, and at the beginning of the war, we said that Baltic states warned other countries about Russia, and actually at the beginning of the war, we were really noticeable. Our voice was heard. How can you say it is now? Is our impact, diminished now?
You know, this is interesting. I just finished a book by Sylvie Kaufmann, Les Aveugles, Blinded. So it is about France and Germany and Russia, how they saw this all. And what is interesting there is that also regarding us as the Baltic countries, she shows how France and Germany have been looking at us through the Russian lens, how Russians see us. And this is to explain why they were their attitude was such. But I think it has changed, or I feel if you read the speech of President Macron in Sorbonne, or his interview in Economist, you know, these are our talking points. So he's definitely listening to us, and we have been right all along.
So we still can set agenda in the European Union and discussions about Ukraine and support.
Yes, we have been the leaders in this regard, and of course we have been managed to, you know, keep the unity. But of course, it's getting harder and harder, because we are all democracies. In democracies, you have domestic problems kicking in, and in southern countries, these are totally different problems than we have. How to keep this unity together? It's extremely hard, but we have to work for this.
We have to work for this, and if you can answer this, how to keep this unity?
Well, all the initiatives that we have, I mean, bringing people on board and also explaining to the publics of our member states. In 2014, when Crimea was annexed, I was a member of European Parliament. What I saw there was that you have from different countries, different parties. And I was so surprised how fast it was went from condemnation to, you know, nothing to see here, let's move on. So the lesson I learned from there is that we have to work with the public opinion of those member states, because every leader, in democratically elected leader, also depends on the public opinion. So if you can bring the public opinion on board, you can also bring the leaders on board.
So far, we are successful?
So far, we have been successful. If you think this war is going on now for third year, and we have been united, we have been helping Ukraine. There is no, you know, drawing a line here and just forget about what you have lost and let's continue business as usual. We haven't gone back to that. And I think that is also the effort of the Baltic countries and Poland in this regard.
One thing about Russia, you said also to stop the historic cycle of Russian aggression, we also need accountability. Mm-hmm. So you believe you are certain that leaders of Russia will help be accountable?
We have to work for this, because I've been reading a lot about different tribunals. And, you know, one of the effects of the Nuremberg Tribunal was that, first, by the way, the tribunal was discussed in 1942, when the war was far from over. Yeah, so that there has to be a tribunal for the crimes committed. Now, we can't imagine that they get off the hook with what they have done. So we have to work with this tribunal, because one of the effects of the Nuremberg Tribunal, besides, you know, holding accountable the people, was also that the German people got to know about the crimes committed in their name. The Russian people don't know about the crimes committed in Latvia, Estonia, or Ukraine, and therefore war for them is glory, it's empire, something else, so it's something good. For small countries like ours, it's always human suffering.
But still, there is doubts that Vladimir Putin, for example, will be punished for his crimes.
Yes, it is difficult, of course. I mean, because we have the leadership crime, which is the crime of aggression, the leaders who have decided to attack another country. And we have the war crimes that are, committed by the soldiers. This is easier part, but there wouldn't be any war crimes if there wouldn't be the crime of aggression. We have to work on this and convince other leaders, because then if there is no accountability, we will see more of this. Like Pope Jean-Paul II said that if you want peace, work for justice.
So it is difficult, but it is possible.
I still think it's possible. Yes, it's difficult, definitely, but it's possible.
If we talk about NATO, we know that there is discussions about new Secretary General. In your opinion, who is the best candidate for the Baltic region?
Well, it's more or less decided. I think there are only two countries who don't support Mark Rutte, so it's going to be Mark Rutte. Of course, we have had meetings with Mark Rutte to express our concerns regarding our region. Of course, the problem for us is that we have been now in NATO for 20 years, some countries even 25 years. But still, I mean, there's going to be Secretary General from the Netherlands, again, the fourth time. But of course, what is Mark Rutte's positive, what is positive about him is that he has been the prime minister of a coalition government for quite some time, and he has been around the European council tables where, you know, you have to find the compromises to listen all the time what others say. So I think in that regard he's strong.
What do you think, do Baltic states have a possibility to maybe lead NATO in next years, next terms? We know Krišjānis Kariņš was mentioned, you also, maybe next term after?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of good people. So definitely, I think the next time we should definitely cooperate in terms of saying that it has to come from our region, considering also the security threats that we have.
If we talk about Russia and Russia's isolation, it's not only about sanctions, it's also about trade and economic ties. Can we actually, as Baltic states, completely cut our ties, economical ties with Russia?
Yes, I think we can. And actually, it would be quite the easiest. It would be a total embargo, a trade embargo with Russia. And that also means transit, because I just went to the border, border points in Estonia, and they say that they do a lot of work to really get this, checking whether, you know, it's really going to Kyrgyzstan, the merchandise, or it's actually going to Russia. But if it would be complete embargo of transit, then it would be much easier for all of us. And I just read the numbers before coming here, and it is interesting that, you know, the imports from Russia have dropped in Estonia significantly, and exports also already when the war started, and now it's 0.5 million the exports to Russia, whereas for Lithuania it's 2 point something million, and for Latvia it's 1.2 or 3 million. So it's still completely not gone.
So, but can we agree on that? As Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, or just Latvia, Estonia, or we have to agree on that in the European Union?
The best would be agreement on European Union, and we have been working for this. We have been providing different alternatives, you know, what wouldn't would maybe fly, but what we haven't received any support. What we definitely need is to have Finland on board as well. Yes, the border points of Finland have been closed when it comes to people, but the railway is still functioning. The trade also over the border, as far as I know. So if we want this to work, we have to do this together.
And if we talk about maybe time, so no trade in Russia next year would be possible and realistic goal, or later?
Well, I think still, you know, as soon as possible, because the question is, we want this war to end so that we have to use all the tools to pressure Russia, economical, political isolation, and also helping Ukraine militarily. So if we want this war to end sooner, we all have to make the effort. That also means enterprises, business side as well, that, you know, yes, it's painful, that is true, but okay, if we all do it, it's going to be shorter.
Why can't we do it like tomorrow?
Because if we just do it alone, then it just goes somewhere else and we don't achieve the effect that we want to achieve.
That so is other European countries?
Yes.
And is it realistic to, I don't know, to have an agreement? between all countries?
Well, we are working on this, and we definitely also today have to discuss the three Baltics, whether we are, I mean, because we have the border with Russia and Belarus, but the border with Russia also Finland has, and the border with Belarus also Poland has. So that's why in order to ban the transit via our countries, it has to be all of those countries together.
So a lot of discussions and a lot of countries to convince, but is it achievable?
Well, it hasn't been achievable so far, but I mean, knowing or seeing that, you know, not all things are working, so we definitely have to find new ways that would be put this pressure on Russia more.
Pressure on Russia, okay, trade and economical ties, and sanctions as well, stronger sanctions. And what can we do about the industry or companies who avoid sanctions?
Well, the circumvention of sanctions is also criminalized. So I mean, this is clear. But the problem is that we don't always, we can't control the other side. I mean, if the companies are saying that, you know, these goods are going to Kazakhstan, there are very few, you know, tools for us to check whether they really go to Kazakhstan. And this is the moral compass of all our companies, really, to you know, assess whether this economic gain that they receive outweighs the human lives cost that is in Ukraine.
And what would you say about this moral compass of companies in Estonia so far?
Well, it's different. Some of the companies ended their trade with Russia immediately when the war started. Some continue until this day. And of course, if it is not sanctioned, you can't, you don't have any tools to say that you can't do this because it's not sanctioned. They are not breaking any rules.
There was huge political scandal in Estonia concerning your husband's business. You already told it, and trade with Russia. You already told that it's a witch hunt by opposition. But is it difficult to talk about this issues with this background?
Well, first of all, he didn't trade with Russia. He didn't have one single Russian client. He helped one Estonian company who had a factory in Russia. So the client was Estonian. All the employees were Estonian. The taxes were paid in Estonian. The fuel was bought from Estonia. So they didn't leave one single euro or dollar on Russia's ground. And considering how the other companies who are constantly trading with actual Russia and you know, paying taxes in Russia and all of this, how they are treated, I would say that it was a witch hunt because there wasn't really element. Plus, my husband sold the moment it came out, the next day he sold his shareholding in this business. So he has nothing to do with this. But of course, I mean, I understand how the political opponents, wanted this to be big enough and how it was really bad. No, it was.
And talking about this trade with Russia and other companies, is it with this scandal, this background, is it more difficult to convince others or... No. There is no really effect, just political scandal.
No political effect that was political scandal. That is, of course, battering me as well. I mean, it was very hard. It concerned my family. But in terms of credibility on the European level, no, it didn't have an effect because other leaders in Europe also said that there is not a case really. So, I mean, yes, that is true. But, you know, in domestic politics, it is different.
If we talk about domestic politics, we had also one big political scandal about our ex-prime minister Krišjāns Kariņš, who used like private jets to get to the meetings. There was also statistics about your flights, and it was in December. It was like 28 times you used private jets to get on the meetings. Was this discussion in Estonia about that, or it is not an issue?
First of all, for going to the European Council meetings, this is paid by the European Council. The few cases where we used, in addition, these planes were because, you know, it would have taken us three days to get there. We don't have direct flights to many places from Estonia. So that is, of course, always the problem. But no, it wasn't an issue in Estonia. It's in the same relatively the same number as the other prime ministers have used the planes.
If you talk about...
And by the way, it's interesting, when we go to those meetings, I mean, majority of European countries have their own planes for the government. So this is even, I mean, I was one leader of one country said that, come and meet me. I said that, you know, it takes me 2 days to get there. So I have to put together a very packed program. And therefore, you know, it's just not... Oh, you don't have a plane? No, we don't have a plane.
Small countries.
Yeah, small countries, that is true.
If we talk about European Union, there is a major event, European Parliament election. If we talk about voters' turnout, it is quite low. In Latvia, it was 33.5%, in Estonia, 37.6%. Do you believe there will be, numbers will be better this year?
I hope that they will be, of course it's a question whether the voters really feel that this is something that influences their life. I say that please vote for people who do this actual work in European Parliament, because probably you have the same in Latvia that, you know, companies complain about the European rules and everything. These rules come from the European Parliament, and you need the people, not who go to the Foreign Affairs Committee, but those who work in the Internal Market Committee, where, you know, all these rules come, and keep in mind the small and medium-sized companies that our economies are based on, their interest in you know, that the reporting requirements are lowered and all these things. Being a European Parliament member, that requires a lot of work, and that's why I always think that, you know, it should be rather those people who are not in the end of their political career, but really want to, you know, work themselves up and be beneficial for our countries.
Could there be attempts to influence the elections from Russia?
Definitely. Russia, we see this, you know, shadow war, and especially information war. So they really want to influence these election results and want to push this result more towards the parties that are not pro-European, who actually want to sow discord amongst ourselves, create chaos, because when we are at each other's throats, then we are more vulnerable for the outside adversaries, and that's what our adversaries also know. So they definitely want to influence the results.
You mentioned this shadow war against our societies. You mentioned in one speech as well, and you said we need to make sure that the European Union does not speak only to the head but also to the heart.
How? No, this is a great question. How? Really, what is Europe all about? Europe is about values and freedom. And I think, you know, maybe in our countries, it's even easier to explain because we didn't have that freedom. We didn't have that freedom and we have it now. I mean, freedom of free movement of people, goods and services, and all of it, what we have gotten, prosperity. Also, what we have gotten from the European Union. So this is definitely to show what people, you know, what the European Union is all about. But it's hard. It's very hard because these are complex problems.
And if we talk about society and how united we are, I spoke with our president, Mr. Edgars Rinkevičs, last week, and he said that COVID and war has further fragmented us. What would you say about Estonian society? Would you agree? This is
also true that we have a lot of confrontation that we didn't have before. I mean, also the opposition is more confrontational than it was before. And what really worries me is that we are in this very difficult crisis. And before, when we were in difficult crisis, like everybody, also the opposition, but also the coalition, understood what is at stake, and we all got ourselves together. Now it's more difficult, although we have a very, very acute security crisis going on, and all these other topics that are related to it.
Other topics, you mentioned the Latvian Ministry of Finances is not very optimistic about next year budget and spendings, but the proposal is to increase allowed structural deficit. In this case, no significant austerity measures will be needed. You also talked about budget, and you had this stability program approved in government. So economically, next year will be really difficult for our region?
Yes, definitely. I know that I read what IMF said, and also IMF said for Latvia that you have to increase taxes. And we have done that, and I can tell you it's very hard. It's very hard. We have a very low tax burden. But considering the costs that we have done for our security, what we have to do, it doesn't come from any foreign uncle or anywhere else but the taxpayer's pocket. And that's why we either, you know, have to decrease the costs that we have, what we are also doing, but we also have to increase the taxes to ask people to pay more for these things. And these are difficult, extremely difficult to get the budget in order.
And the best way, if we talk about maybe your advice for Latvia, the best way to cut costs?
Well, this is, I am no one to give advice because I'm struggling with this as myself. I mean, when you say that we have to cut costs, everybody's like, yeah, we have to cut costs, we agree. But then you go to the actual costs that we have to cut. And they say, no. In education, you can't cut anything. No, culture, I mean, no. There you can't cut anything. Oh, you know, economy is not doing well, so you can't cut there as well. So basically, it's very hard. Is there anything that is popular or not painful? No. It's not. All the cuts are painful. You know, it's much easier for not to give something out, you know, support, child support or pensions, than to go and have to cut them. So I'm no one to give advice to Latvia in this regard.
If we talk about also investments, which are really important for an economy, Russian factor, Russian threat is the factor that, I don't know, really makes it worse with investments in our region?
Actually, not anymore. I mean, first, when the war started, yes, we saw that the interest regarding our region dropped. But now we see the investors back again because they understand that we are the same as the other NATO countries. It doesn't really, the war is not here. And it's a very, a very good region, considering that we have good, hardworking people. We have a very good working culture and a lot of good brains in terms of technology sector and a lot of things to offer, really, also to the investors.
Okay. Two more questions in conclusion. On May 1st, there was 20 years since we joined the European Union. We've heard a lot about what the Union has given us. And how do you think we have affected, influenced the European Union as Baltic states?
That is a good question. Every country brings something on board to the European table. I think we are more open-minded when it comes to technological development and digitalization. I think this is something that we bring to the table. Of course, knowing Russia is something that we bring to the table as well. We are pushing Europe in terms of more in terms of thinking about small and medium-sized companies, because these are the things that the single market in our case is based on. And of course, the single market as well. For small countries like ours, we benefit a lot from our companies getting access to the European market. And that's why it's very important for us that all these things work. We definitely have to work more for the services sector also to be open to our people.
And the last one, do Estonians also often compare themselves to Latvians?
All the time.
And are there things we have in Latvia you would like to have similar in Estonia?
Well, you know, we have one journalist that reports from Latvia, and every time I look at the news, it's like everything is so well in Latvia, everything is so well done in Latvia and compared to us. So right now, I mean, our economy is doing worse than your economy, because our economy is very much tied to the Nordics, 26% that we have been tied, whereas it's only 10% for Latvia. It has risen us for many years, but now it is, keeping us back, because they are not doing that well. But there's a lot we can learn from each other, and definitely constant comparing. Having good neighbors is pushing you also more to do. So reading the news about Latvia, we also want to do more.
Thank you for the interview. Paldies jums arī skatītāji, un tiksimies jau drīz.